Hockey and music go hand in hand. I mean, you can't even start a game if you don't have a hard pumping song to get you going. And of course, the music for the Mother Puckers openings and closing song, Havoc by Sean Tubbs, sounds even better thanks to J-Rocket Audio Design's pedals. For you hockey moms out there who also have guitar players, there's no better pedal on the market to help your budding Jeff Beck sound like Jeff Beck than with the JB Archer from J-Rocket Audio Designs or any of the many award-winning pedals produced by them. Other than the sound, the best part is they are made in the USA. All you have to do is go to rocketpedals.com. That's with two T's, R-O-C-K-E-T-T, pedals, P-E-D-A-L-S.com, to hear and see the products, find distributors, and enjoy the website experience. And if you purchase a pedal from JRAD, please use the code PUCKERS because that is going to get you 10% off of your purchase. And I will personally thank you on my podcast. And when your little player plays himself a little song or records it, send it on in. I'll make a compilation and put them all out on the podcast in the future. Thank you to J-Rocket Audio Designs for being the first Mother Puckers sponsor. Welcome to Mother Puckers, the first and only podcast for hockey moms by a hockey mom. And that's me, Julie Bardowski, alongside the hockey apostle and the 13th disciple, Lou Mangialuzzo. Welcome to the show. Hi, Lou. We're back.
How are we doing today?
We're doing great. Doing great. So while you were doing some vacation and things, and I was running the month of September, something exciting happened. Released the 100th episode of Mother Puckers.
Wow. Oh, that's so great. That's great stuff, huh? I know. Just think of all the work and time and effort you put into that.
I know. And you know what I did not realize is that how rare getting to your 100th episode is.
Really?
Yeah. So apparently, okay, so here are the numbers. There's between 3 and 4 million podcasts available.
Oh, really?
In the world.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, 3 to 4 million. The average number of episodes per podcast is 3. So people get on, they're like, I've got this idea, I'm going to do this. And then they realize how hard it is. And after the third episode, they're like, uh-uh, I'm not doing this anymore.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of work. Oh, yeah, it's a lot of work, huh?
Yeah.
So much work.
Yeah, and then only 720,000 podcasts have 10 or more episodes. Then wow. Only 156,000 have weekly drops. And then they say the top 50% of podcasts have 30 downloads in the first week, and that 80 million people in the United States listen to at least one podcast per week.
Wow.
So Mother Pucker's numbers are... That means that we're in the top 156,000 of all the podcasts, which that's pretty good, right?
Yes, very good.
Then we're in the top 50% by tens of thousands because we have so many great listeners out there listening and downloading all the time. So of that 156,000, that means we're in the top 70,000. We've got listeners in 15 countries.
Oh, my God.
We are in the top 25% of hockey podcasts and in the top tier of parenting podcasts.
Wow.
It's crazy. And we got to thank the listeners, so many loyal listeners who've been along this ride from the beginning. And I honestly didn't realize it was going to take me 3.5 years to get to 100 because, I mean, you think 52 years a year, you do at least 45 episodes, it'd be a lot quicker. But I went into a black hole when we were in Minnesota for that year. So I was off the air that whole time, but I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for two things. One, for the listeners, but also for you, Lou, because you get me going every week since
I get you going. I get a lot of people going.
Exactly.
Somebody said to me today, I've known you now. This friend of mine from Virginia, she'd say, or son plays hockey, she'd say, you are such an advocate, a guardian of the game. You're so relentless.
Yes.
When it comes to the kids.
Yeah.
And want everything right. And that's because I've seen it turn itself upside. I've seen the business turn itself upside down. And in one way, we're going to talk about that in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
About one way that online school has turned it upside down, has turned it totally upside down, and it's made it easier. It's just not always all the right thing isn't always done. Let me say it like that. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
It's an easy out for some people. And
That'll be really good to talk about.
It will be very good.
And it's not just hockey. It's this online school BS everywhere is just kind of crazy. Yeah.
It's been a vehicle for some, not all, but it's been a vehicle for some to do just whatever they want. Because there really is no ramification.
We'll save that for when we talk about it. Yeah.
We'll just tease it. We're just teasing them all right now.
We're teasing you guys.
Yes, exactly. We're
tickling you in your tickle spot to be able to come back and listen.
Tickle's going to turn into like a stab in the side.
Wait, are you saying you're a thorn in somebody's side now too?
I've been that.
Oh my gosh. You know, I do want to do a little
recap.
On September's episodes around suicide awareness and prevention and mental health.
Important topic, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I got to tell you. So I get a lot of messages. I get DMs. I get information. People share, you know, if they like them, if they've got a question or if it's some episode that they don't like, you know. And I respond to everybody. You just send them to julie@motherpuckers.com or DM me on any of the socials. But first off, going into September and the four episodes that I'd lined up was really uncomfortable for me. And now, though, I'm overwhelmed by it. So the first episode with the Sprungs talking about the Keith Milano Fund and Denise and Larry really trying to work on normalizing the language around suicide. And you can get yourself educated, listeners, if you haven't listened to that episode yet, go back and listen to it. But then we went into Danielle Demko, Thatcher's mom, and she talked about Thatcher's mindset, things he had to do as a youth player, trying to, you know, go to the next level and those kinds of things and the mind, body, spirit. And then we talked to Rob Thorson, whose son Hayden was a goalie for Long Island Gulls, and he died by suicide about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and he shared his family's journey with suicide and how it impacted them. And then we ended with Jen Wheaton, who is like otherworldly. I don't know what else to say about her, but talking about mind, body, spirit and how the thinking body makes the dancing mind. You would think it's the other way around, right? You'd think it's dancing body, thinking mind. But she talked about how the body of an athlete has been solving complex problems as long as they've been an athlete. So allowing your body to solve those problems and then influence the mind and how it works in conjunction. Oh my gosh, it was mind-blowing episode. But the feedback that I got, this is the thing, Lou. This is where I'm a little kind of overwhelmed. So I heard from one mom who asked her son how he was doing and if he was thinking about hurting himself, because that's some of the language we learned to ask. And the son admitted he was very overwhelmed and he had been having some really dark thoughts, and the mom got him some help.
Right.
The next one was a mom who asked her son, who was a hockey player, similar questions. And the daughter overheard it, who's not a hockey player, and she said, hey, mom, I think that kind of hits home for me. So she got her daughter some help.
Wow.
The big one, Lou, is a hockey mom reached out, and she had kind of felt some things with her husband. And she asked him the question. And he immediately responded with, yes, I am going to hurt myself. I need help. She checked him into a psychiatric hospital immediately after. I don't know for sure, but I think he's still there. This is just in the past few days, but those responses just made me kind of gut punch, overwhelm, thankful, grateful for the lessons that all of these guests shared through their experience. But I'm still sitting on that kind of heavy. I don't know. Well, I don't know how I should be feeling. I don't think there's any right or wrong way, but I'm really grateful that they learned some good tools from these episodes.
Yeah, I think it's great. And did you see the guy? I can't think of his name now. Did you see the guy that played football at Ohio State, at ESPN? Somebody did a special on him. I don't know if he's a linebacker. He was on the football team and he went to a really dark place. And now I think he's still at Ohio State. I wish I could think of his name. He's a blonde haired guy. He's no longer on the football team and he's now helping players and people. And he goes on speaking tours. I cannot think of the guy's name for the life of me, but I saw the thing on him where he said where he was at. And I'll just say to that point, like, you know, before us, I would think, and I drive once in a while, I'll go up the New York State line just before I cross into Connecticut to go over to Hotchkiss School or Canterbury. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Harlem something, the stop on the train, where people actually can take the train an hour into the city from up north. And there's this dark building, this giant building, and it was an old psychiatric home, you follow me? And, mm-hmm. A company went in there and bought a couple of buildings and turned it into something else. And it's eerie looking because it's mostly shut down. It's shut down for psychiatric, but it's mostly shut down for everything. And there's somebody rented a piece of the property. But it just goes to show you that for decades and decades and decades, you know, we just really never really wanted to help people in some ways that we should have. We just medicated them. Here's some medicine.
And locked them away.
Operated on them. Who knows what they did to people in the 30s and 20s. And, you know, I've experienced this recently with a young man who I don't think he's to that stage of what we're discussing, but I could see something that I'm thinking, you know, this kid here, he's under a lot of pressure. School's hard. Hockey's not always going perfect. And I could feel it. And I mentioned to somebody and we got him a bit of like a sports. Anyway, long story short, but it's amazing how some people can get to this dark place. Right. And that's why I always ask the kids, how you doing? How's it doing? And have you ever seen the video of the professor that walks into the classroom with a mayonnaise jar? Have you ever seen it?
No. What's that?
Oh, I'm going to send it to you.
All right.
I know our listeners have seen this. A lot of people have seen this. He walks in to the classroom. It's a collegiate. It looks like a collegiate college. And he's got this big, it's an extra large mayonnaise jar. And he's got golf balls and he puts the golf balls in. And he's got these marbles in a cup and he puts the marbles in. And he puts some raisins in. And then he puts this some sand in. And, you know, and then he's got two beers he sets on the table. And he's asking the students, is it full yet? Is the glass full or whatever? Is the cup full? They're going, no, yes, yes. And what it comes down to is that the golf balls are like your mom and dad and your brother and sister. And then the marbles are like your friends and school. And the raisins are like your bills and your car and your hobbies. And then the sand is all the small stuff. And what he says in the class is that if you put all the sand in first, you don't have any time for the real important things in life.
Mm.
Like
yeah.
your family and your friends and other things. And that's the essence of I tell a lot of young men. And I'm around a lot of kids, girls and boys. And I don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
25 years from now, what you, and I understand what they're all going through, but 25 years later, you're going to look back and you think, I was worried about that. And it's so funny, in the video, the student says, Professor, what's the two beers for? And he puts a little beer on the top and he says, even when your life seems so full, you always have a little room to have a couple beers with a couple buddies.
Yeah, well, there's the connection that we all need, right? Having your
right, and it's so true. You have to tell so many young people, but don't sweat the small stuff. Yeah, I know it seems big, but it's really not. It's. I'll show you the video. I know a lot of the listeners have seen this. It's terrific. Yeah. It's absolutely terrific.
I have to watch it. So that player you were talking about at Ohio State, his name is Harry Miller. And it says, his decision to leave football has changed his life by opening up about his struggles with mental health. He's impacting student athletes everywhere.
I saw the video on that guy, and I was just like, he just got so emotional about it. Like, some people are in such a dark place for all different reasons. And it's just, I always ask kids, how you doing today? Everything okay? Yeah. It's good. Because you just don't know. And some people, they don't ever ask for help.
Well, most people don't know how.
And the more
we normalize it, the more parents, like the three that I've heard from, or the wife and the two moms, the more that we normalize it as parents, the more trusting our kids are going to be in sharing to us what's really going on. So it's good. That was really impactful. I felt having those episodes on. So I'm really grateful for those guests, and then for all the listeners who let me know how you thought and everything. But so today we have a really fun guest, Rand Pecknold, coach of the Quinnipiac Bobcats. And I'm just going to preview this a little bit, Lou, because you talked about this, about referring to hockey as the Hunger Games.
Yes, it's the Hunger Games. All right. Hunger Games times five.
I think, you know, it's funny. Because remember when we talked a few weeks ago, we were talking about like the parent meetings and how they change from mite to midget.
Yes.
I think that the Hunger Games, though, is consistent throughout all ages of hockey.
I mean, I just I saw someone out the other day at the Hunger Games. They go, "Oh my god, you're so right! Oh my god!" But I found a lot of people. Speaking of movies, I try to talk about Moneyball with Brad Pitt and the athletics about analytics, right? And some parents haven't even parent kids haven't even seen Moneyball. And I'm going, "You never saw Moneyball? Oh my god!"
Yeah. Well, and how many teams in the NHL have moved to that type of using data and analytics only as their method of evaluating? I mean, they've got to be several out there, right?
Yeah, oh, there's a lot. And I don't know if any really won on it, I can tell you that.
No, you can't. No, but what I'm thinking is they, the thing that Moneyball shows and then continues to show is that data and analytics, yes, super important. It's good to have all of that information for all of the different aspects that it can expose, right? But that Moneyball year, and honestly, so it was about the Boston Red Sox, and it was the year that they played the St. Louis Cardinals in the World Series.
I thought Moneyball was about the Athletics.
Uh-uh, it's about the Boston Red Sox. And at the end
hold on. It's about Billy Beane, who was the GM of the Athletics, who turned down the Red Sox job, was it not?
Yes. I'm almost positive it was about Boston, because at the end, they, in my opinion, misportrayed the ending of it. But you're right. See, Billy Beane, the GM of the A's, is devastated by the team's loss to the New York Yankees. Right. So then he needs to assemble a team for 2002.
It's about the Athletics.
Yeah, you're right. I must. Yeah, what am I thinking about then? I thought I'm gonna have to go back and watch it.
No, he was actually in the movie. He's actually offered the Red Sox job. And he doesn't take it. And it's a true story about the Athletics. I think they won 21 in a row. I don't think they ever won the World Series. Well, they did win the World Series, but not during this period when, it's about analytics. It's a great scene about it when Russ comes in, the chief scout, and he says, Billy, I want to talk to you. And he says, what's up? He says, we've been doing baseball for 150 years this way, and you brought in Google Boy from Yale.
Yes. Yeah, who doesn't know anything about hockey or baseball?
And that's what Billy says to him, Brad Pitt says to him, you know, Russ, I watched you at the dining room table with these parents and these kids, projecting them, how much money they're going to make, where they're going to play, what position. And the fact of it is that you don't know.
No.
And he says, I don't know either. We think we know. But the idea of it is that we really don't. And I always say, and it's not in the movie, I say the reason we don't know is because we're a free society and life gets in the way. Yeah. And life truly gets in the way. Young men or women, we have relationships. We some kids start to drink. Some do drugs. We're not a helicopter gunship pilot in China that gets up at 4 o'clock, and his whole life is pretty much written out for him, what he's going to be doing his whole next 30 years, right? Okay.
We
don't have that regiment, and we have a free will and a choice, and life does get in the way. And that's why where I live, I think when the top 501s were 14, when they were 18, four of them didn't even play hockey anymore.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Because life gets in the way of it.
Well, it's not so much that life gets in the way. I think it's you just change. You just decide, I'm going to do this instead.
Well, you can do that too. Yeah. That's true too, right?
Yeah.
Yep. You want to be with your friends or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah.
Analytics. No. And I think also too, and I could be wrong about this, but I give it some thought. I think the reason we have so much analytical information now is because our ownerships are different now.
Yeah, they're conglomerates. They're VC companies. Yeah,
hedge fund guys.
They want their
investment
return.
Bankers.
Uh-huh.
They like that money. They like those numbers. Those numbers is what made them money. They live and die by it. So why not address it and put it in sports? Because that's what was successful in everything else, right?
Yeah, and it's how do you feel about that type of ownership in sports?
Whether I like depends who owns teams, but you know, I get where the business is going. But in some owners, I'm not so sure. I love when certain type people own sports teams that are in certain type businesses for different reasons. But I would say, like on the analytic thing, I think it can play a role. I think teams that use it to play a role to have the information is great. I think when you start to lean on it too much, I think it's a failure.
Yeah.
I think it's a bust. I think it can play a role, and rightly so it should. But I know some teams in the NHL, they have 5 or 6 or 8 analytic people.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's different aspects of it. There's the fans, so they've got to do all the analytics around tickets. Oh, just the hockey side?
Oh, yeah. I know a team in the Western Conference. They have 7 analytic people working all on hockey.
What?
Oh. Yes.
Then they've got the wrong analytic tools. They need better tools that gives them the data very simply.
Yeah, but I'm just saying to you that, like, that's it. Like, in the teams I've been with, well, I'm a little older now, so we didn't have it in Quebec.
Right.
And in Ottawa, Jesus, I left there in 2017. I don't think we had anybody. But when I moved to New Jersey, we did, and they believe they have. I think we had 2 when I was there. There might be a third person now. But anyway, it all depends on how you use the information, right?
I've been in technology for decades, and there's a lot easier way. I mean, there's massive organizations that will still only have 1 or 2. Analysts running their data because they've got better tools to chew on that data and spit out what you're looking for.
Yeah, it's public knowledge. It's not like it's like a secret I'm giving out about this team I work for, whatever. They do whatever they want to do. I mean, I think it's pretty common knowledge.
Oh, yeah. You know, everybody has them.
Every team is different, and I enjoyed my time there. But anyway, it's
everybody has them.
So that's it. That's
so Hunger Games. But the other thing that Rand talked about right after the Hunger Games, he's talking about the survival skills that you develop in hockey. So we've got Hunger Games and survival skills going on in the episode. One thing that he brought up that I thought would be interesting for our listeners. So make sure you listen to this part of the interview. Also, is he talked about how Quinnipiac and their development model has been so good that they've had walk-ons actually go on to the NHL and play games. So, you know, as everybody's out there chasing scholarships and everything, there's all other opportunities that if you go to the right program with the right development model, that could end you in some of your goals that you're trying to achieve. I thought that was kind of cool to hear from him.
So. Yeah, it was great stuff.
Oh, I mean, yeah. He was so knowledgeable. Holy smokes. And I full on fangirled. I full on fangirled.
Well, that's why in the interview, I wanted him to talk about his dad, his family, yeah, and where that program was when he first started. Like, he didn't really want to talk too much about it. Like, but I wanted the people, our listeners, to know, really, he was at the bottom.
Yeah. And when you then become the third winningest coach in NCAA history at one college, it's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it's a great place, Quinnipiac. I like it.
Yeah. Well, let's kick it over to Rand and our conversation with him then.
Perfect.
All right. Today's guest is Coach Rand Pecknold of the Quinnipiac Bobcats. This coach, we go through it, but let me tell you, he's starting his 30th year at Quinnipiac as their head coach. He has the most wins of any coach in Quinnipiac hockey and Quinnipiac athletic history. He also leads all active D1 men's coaches in wins, which is the number 615, which is also the area code in Nashville. They are the 2023 national champions, and you'll hear in the episode that they are celebrating with their banner raising the day after this drops. He's won the 2016 Spencer Penrose National Coach of the Year, 2016 College Hockey News National Coach of the Year, 5-time ECAC Hockey Tim Taylor Coach of the Year, 2013 New England Hockey Writers Association Clark Hodder Coach of the Year, 7 ECAC Hockey Cleary Cup Regular Season Championships, and a 2016 Hockey Whitelaw Cup Tournament Championship. In 2012, 2015, 2021, and 2022, he guided the Bobcats to the number one ranking in the USCHO.com Division I Men's Ice Hockey and USA Today USA Hockey Magazine polls. I mean, come on. It's crazy. We're going to keep going. Under his leadership, Quinnipiac was the only team to win an ECAC hockey tournament series in every season from 2005 through 2017. 5-time Spencer Penrose Award finalist, given to the National Coach of the Year, 2005 Atlantic Hockey Coach of the Year, 9-time NCAA tournament participant, 2002 MAC tournament champions, 20 win seasons, including 5 consecutive years with at least 20 wins, 8 conference tournament final appearances, assistant coach at Connecticut College, where he graduated from, 3-year letter winner as a player at Connecticut College, 20 consecutive non-losing seasons from 1997 to 2017. He earned his bachelor's degree in economics and his master's degree in education from Connecticut College in 1990 and 1993, respectively. Let's talk about his team. 243 all-academic team selections throughout his years as a coach. His boys have won 59 all-league selections, 26 first-team picks, 20 all-rookie team picks, 8 Quinnipiac Cup MVPs, 8 league players of the year, 7 league rookies of the year, 13 all-Americans, 8, count them, 8 Hobie Baker Award finalists, 2 Hockey Scholars Athletes of the Year, 5 League Goaltenders of the Year, 4 Mike Richter Award finalists, 1 Hobie Baker Award hat trick finalist, and 1 National Rookie of the Year. He has just put it all together. And with those numbers, you will understand why when I saw him in the stands at the USHL Fall Classic that I full-on fangirled, and I could not be more thrilled than to have had the opportunity to interview him and share his philosophies and what he's doing at Quinnipiac with all of you. And hopefully you will walk away being a Bobcat fan just like I am, even though I did get written out of my family's will rooting for the Bobcats over the Gophers in the World National Championship last year. But welcome to the episode, Coach Rand Pecknold. All right, Mother Puckers, you already heard all the things that our guest today has accomplished in his career, Coach Rand Pecknold, and we're going to dig into it. It's a great and amazing career that will help shape the future of hockey, college hockey, and then some with the boys that have come through his program and where they're ending up in their careers. We have Lou Mongeluzzo on the phone, so let's just kick off and say hi. Where is everybody? Rand, where are you today, Coach?
I'm in Southport, Connecticut, where I live. I left early from Quinnipiac so I could get home, and then I'll be here when my 10-year-old gets home from school. So hopefully he doesn't bother me. I forgot to tell him we had a Zoom, but I'm just hanging out in Connecticut. Had a good practice today, and excited to get started with the season.
It's amazing. When does the season actually start?
So October 7th will be our first game with Boston College.
Ooh, get just right into it.
Yes,
absolutely. I like it. Lou, where are you today?
I am sitting in the Planet Fitness parking lot.
Did you already work out, or are you getting to work out?
No, I was going to, but between staying in a hotel because my wife is under the weather and the little one too, I don't want to get sick. And because I got to go to work, got to go away next weekend. I don't want anything to interfere with it, so I'm going to give them a couple of days to get where they need to be before I pick up some stuff at home and I'm back out. And that's the way it is.
How it goes sometimes, you know, making the sacrifice. And, you know, it's not like you to not have to spend a night in a hotel, right?
I've spent it in the car many nights.
Your wife kicks you out that much?
you work for Big Mike. You went a lot of places, right, Rand? Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never worked for him, but I can guess.
You can imagine. Yes, you can. Yes. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh. This is great.
Well, what I'd love to talk about first, Coach Pecknold, is you have such a long history in college hockey. What are the biggest differences from when you started coaching to 20 years ago, 10 years ago to today?
First off, when I started, we were Division III.
Okay.
And we practiced at midnight. So that would be a big one. Where now we're Division I and a national power and have a nice practice slot and have a $65 million arena. So those would be some simple things that have changed. We have scholarships and et cetera. But it's been an interesting journey for me. This is the start of my 30th year at Quinnipiac. The first four were Division III, and then this is the 26th year of Division I. Even in the Division I, we went D1. We were initially in the MAC, which is now Atlantic Hockey. In those early days of the MAC, we had like two scholarships.
Oof.
Atlantic Hockey now has more than that, it was, it was almost like cost containment Division I early on, and then we really ramped it up, and then once we built the rink and got into the ECAC, like, things took off for us.
That's amazing. And how did you make that jump from Division III to Division I at that time? Was there criteria you had to hit, or?
Yeah. So I don't remember the whole thing. Jack McDonald was our athletic director. He had been the AD at Denver. Denver had been historically a Division II school, playing Division I hockey. And then while he was there, he took all of Denver Athletics to full D1. And then that's why we hired him to come to Quinnipiac, was to take our athletics to D1. I was not privy to a lot of what went on with that. All I knew, I was pretty happy to also be a Division I head coach. And I'm like, I'll take it and I'll work hard and make sure we win and our kids graduate.
That's the key. Kids graduating, in my opinion, as a mom. So yes. What do you do on the academic side to support the athletes? Because that's hard, student athletes.
Hold on. My dogs are interrupting here.
Okay.
All good.
They're not happy. All good.
Bring them on in.
So for us, we have an academic advisor. We have study hall. If the kids' grades are good, then they get out of the study hall. And honestly, we have like a GPA of a 3.7. So it's,
wow.
We don't have a lot in there. I think last year, I think we had only one kid under a 3.0. But our initial, when our freshmen arrive, they all go in it and we just want to make sure that they're on task and they usually do great. We have a lot of resources here to be successful at Quinnipiac with our academics. The class size is probably the best thing is the class sizes are really small. So you're not going to school where you're, an American history class has 500 kids in it in this huge lecture hall, or English, or some of those schools do, they do that, or they do online classes. Some of the D1s are doing that now, and then they don't even take attendance. So it's hard to get lost at Quinnipiac. You're going to get a good education, but we certainly have tutors and everything if they need them. But honestly, most of our guys don't need them.
I also understand there's a 67% ratio of female students to male students.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good recruiting skill number too.
I would say we're probably closer to 70%. I don't know where I get the 67 from, but usually it's 70. But yeah, it's not why you choose Quinnipiac as a hockey player, but it certainly doesn't hurt us in the recruiting world. Not going to lie.
You know what, Coach? You know what, Julie, I didn't know this, Rand. I heard you talk about maybe just a year ago, and you talked about the 30 years you've been there. I never knew, because Timmy Burke, we know Tim Burke, right? And Tim Burke knew your father, and because you were born in New Hampshire, I believe, correct?
I was born in Boston, and I lived in Winchester, Mass. So I was about eight, and then I moved to Bedford, New Hampshire.
Okay, but your father's a Western Canadian. Is he a Western guy?
Yes, correct. Yep.
And like, did he play in the Allen Cup? I believe did he play in the Allen Cup at one point or during any time?
He might have. I don't know.
I think he did. Well, I thought you would. Tim Burke knows, you know, works for San Jose, as we all know him, right, Julie? But he would tell me about your father was a terrific player.
He grew up in Victoria and then Vancouver and then went to Michigan State on hockey scholarship. And then the Rangers had signed him, was like a C form when he was like 14 years old, right? For $500 draft back then. And then when he got out of Michigan State, he went to, he made the decision to not play hockey and went to MIT to do to get his doctorate.
Right. Because I was told Timmy Burke, who knows, he's like 67, but he's going like 97. He knows. And I heard your interview, and I don't know when it was, about all the things like Julie that Rand's been through in the last 30 years, like stuff like you had goalies play, you know what I'm talking about.
Right? Oh, yeah.
I think that would be, I know it's going to take a few minutes, but I think you could share that with our audience. Like that you've jumped through some hoops that I had no idea.
Yeah. There's a million stories from year one alone with when I took it over, it quite possibly was the worst Division III program. I would have been better off taking that program from scratch. I had 17 kids, 17 skaters try out, and 12 goalies. That was year one. I was like, I didn't even have enough players. And by the end of the year, we had a bunch of kids quit because we actually had to instill some discipline. And I had to be like, guys, you can't show up at practice drunk. That's not going to cut it like that. They were mad about it.
There's the difference from 30 years ago to today's hockey
we had to put some rules in. And actually I'm still friends with some of those guys that played for me in year one. We laugh about it all the time, but it was crazy. Like the end of the year, there was games we played with like 9 or 10 skaters. I was 1-12-1 after 14 games, practicing at midnight, making no money, kind of, and living 70 miles away. And I was like, what am I doing? It was a grind. I was like, I'll grind it out. And then we ended the year, we went 5-3 in our last eight with 9 or 10 skaters and a goalie. We were better with less players, which is crazy to play college hockey like that. So there was the games where we literally like a whole entire period, we wouldn't forecheck because we didn't have enough because we got too tired. It was crazy. But anyway, it all worked out. And then year two, we got a 9:40 PM practice slot because I was teaching high school to make real money, to make any money and have benefits. And then that's second year, my first recruiting class, I brought in 19 freshmen and we got a lot better fast and we were pretty good in year three. And year four, we were awesome. I think we only lost 3 games. And then year five, we made the jump to Division I.
I heard that. I don't know when you know what I'm talking about, right? You recorded that maybe a year ago or 6 months, or maybe it was after you guys won this year. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But I heard that little story. And I'm thinking, like, I don't know anybody that.
Yeah.
I don't know another story like that, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it was crazy because we lived so far away where my teaching job was, and then I would sleep 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. I like lived my life in this 12-hour increments. It's not easy to do. I'm not going to lie. Like I figured it out how to do it, but
you were young then too.
Yeah, I was young, and if I got to a Sunday and I could actually get any sleep, it was just awesome. That was like the highlight of my week was to get real sleep. But I was just so competitive, and we were so bad too. But I was like, you know what? We'll get a good recruiting class in, and we'll figure it out. And I did. I had some really good players in that first class, and that kind of launched us on our way.
How did you recruit them?
I mean, honestly, a lot of it was just you know, everybody knew we needed players. Like, you know, a lot of it was, hey, you want to, like, I had freshmen on my first line. Freshmen were everywhere. Like, they knew they were going to get a chance to play. So sometimes that's really important to kids. Sometimes it's not. Just depends. But for a lot of the guys we took, like, I wouldn't say I was relentless, but I was good. Like, I called them, I wrote them, you know, I went and watched them play, most of them. And then sometimes you just want to go where you're wanted, and those kids were wanted, knew they'd play. And, you know, Quinnipiac's a nice school. It's got a great campus.
The Rock, right? Up at the top of the hill, The Rock?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what they call it?
Well, the rink we call the Bank, because we've always been sponsored by a variety of different banks. Now it's M&T Bank, but they call the student center, I think the bar in there is called The Rock. How did you know that?
I do my research.
There you go.
Man, she's good, man. Yeah. Oh, Joel, you've never been there, right?
No, I haven't been there.
It's beautiful. It really is beautiful. It's a terrific school. Like, I live in Philadelphia, so, I mean, whether it's KYW News or any other outlet, media outlet, Quinnipiac's, obviously they're somewhat famous for their poll. We all know that, Quinnipiac poll, research poll. But, like, they advertise down here. I'm sure that you have lots of kids from Jersey and Pennsylvania.
We do. Actually, one of our best players, Sam Lipkin, is a Philly area kid.
Yeah, I know. Played junior flyers. Yep.
He was a rookie of the year in our league.
Phoenix Draft, right?
Yeah. Well, he played on the world junior team for me, too.
Yeah. So that's great stuff. Yep.
That's awesome. And so from there, when you got your team together, you made the jump to Division One. It then obviously became easier to recruit players and to put the team together and to keep on going, right?
Yeah, I mean, it gets easier. I get the comment, I think I got about 100 times this summer, well, you know, it was, wow, it must be so easy to recruit right now that you won a national championship. And I'm like, not really. Like, if you want to get the top kids, it's hard. Like, it's so competitive. We do well. We get really good players. But, you know, all the first rounders all want to go to the same, you know, 5, 6, 7 schools. And we're trying to crack into that. And in some ways, you know, and listen, I would take those kids if I can get them. But in some ways, we've had a lot of success with getting, you know, kids in our draft. We do really well with a lot of kids that are late bloomers. They blossom once they get to Quinnipiac, including Devon Toews, who's now a superstar in the NHL with the Avalanche. He went undrafted his 18-year-old year and then didn't get drafted until after his freshman year at Quinnipiac. We've had that happen a lot, where kids get passed over in the draft. Or this past year, you know, Colin Graft got passed over 3 years in a row, never got drafted, and then he's one of the best players in college hockey in his first year at Quinnipiac, and every NHL team wants him, and he's going to be probably the most – he could have left this year. He decided to come back for one more year, which we got really fortunate to make that decision. But he'll have, I would think, 32 offers at the end of the year to go right to the NHL.
So sometimes it's better to be undrafted.
It can be, yeah. In a lot of ways, now you've got bargaining power.
Yeah.
All the kids and parents want their kid to get drafted. But if you're going to go late in the draft, 6th, 7th round for sure, Lou knows this, like, you're better off not getting drafted and being a free agent, and – you can pick and choose where you want to go. And maybe that style fits you better. Maybe that coach fits you better. Maybe the team's in a rebuild mode. It's better for you. If you get drafted, you don't really have any options. That's your team.
Coach, I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit. I've watched your program for a long time. And I mean, you've molded these kids pretty well. You get some good players, but there's a lot of really good players. You're not getting the, like, all the best kid by any means, let's be honest, right? Like, you're not getting some of the kids that BC get, maybe because of tradition or they've been around longer, or that whatever, or BU. Let's be honest. Like, I know you don't want to say it, but I'll say it. Like, it's a pretty balanced 4-line team. Like, it's, and the way you play, kids do get better, they improve, they work at it. You're not getting the coolies, you're not getting those kids, and that's okay, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we have a really good I just use the term business plan in place for each kid, that this is how you're going to get better each year, within the year and each summer. And, I think we're one of the best at developing players, maybe even the best. I mean, it's hard to really quantify that, but, you know, we had five players who could come back offered by the NHL last year.
You know, oh, wow. Like,
That's insane.
That is.
If you have one, if you have one underclassman a year get offered to leave early, that's a lot. And two is crazy. I had four in 2016. That was crazy. This year I had five. I was like, oh my God. And two signed and then three came back. If we'd lost all five, I don't know what I would have done, but it's nice. It's, and if you do a good job developing these kids, then that's what's going to happen. But we have a lot of undrafted players that blossom at Quinnipiac. We have a great strength coach. We have a phenomenal culture, which allows these players to get better. I think a big part of what we do well is just our practice habits are just, they're awesome. Like it's a war every day in practice. Kids love it. And we have kids that they don't dread coming to the rink. They love it. They love coming to the rink. They want to get better. And when you're going 100% 6 days a week instead of just 2 days on the weekend for your games, that's how you get better. That's that defined practice, and you see a lot of improvements.
Yeah, you can't go 50% during the week at practice and then expect yourself to go 110% during the game. You got to practice as you play. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you got a good staff. Got a really good staff, right?
Yep, excellent staff. Yep, great assistants. For sure.
I want to go back to the players that you get, because this year, and I think in many years when you get to the Frozen Four, whomever the team may be, to me, and Lou and I talked about this after y'all won the national championship, and Lou and I talked about it. I got disowned by my Gopher family, but I just said, you know, just because you have all of these all-star names, it does not necessarily equate to championships. You see that at the youth level. You see that at the high school level. You know, it's got to be a team. So what do you do that brings these kids together to buy into what you're selling and put it all together so that you can dominate? And I don't mean just win, but dominate these teams on the ice.
Yeah, I think the first thing we do is we really understand what type of player excels at Quinnipiac. So our two key things, so Joe Dume, Mike Corbin are my assistants now. It was Billy Regan, who's now the head coach at Holy Cross. And even past guys, they do a really good job of understanding what works in our culture. And the two main things are high hockey IQ and elite character. And do we want talent? Yeah, we want talent. But we can't have talent that is missing either of those two things. If the kid's a bad kid, it's not a good fit. If they're a high talent, but their IQ is not great, it's not a good fit. So we know what works for us. And then within our culture, we do a lot of things to kind of cultivate that culture. And it's a lot of it is just positivity. And, you know, like everything we do is about building kids up. There certainly are times when I have to get firm with the guys. That's not good enough, but it's not, you know, we really do our best to not single a kid out. I think it's the old way of coaching, right? Lou knows that. Like, grab a kid, you're yelling at him. Like last year, I think I yelled once the whole year. And that's not to say,
you got to tell us what it was.
I'm not telling you what it was. I don't baby them. I don't coddle them. Like we're firm, but we're fair. And this is, they want that too. Our players are like, we just have our freshmen coming in now. We got transfers from a lot of really good programs that came in here. And, you know, actually three of them, I won't name the schools where they came from. I guess you could look it up online. We did have six transfers, but we're just like, wow. Like now I know why Quinnipiac wins. I mean, this was like after one day in the weight room and one day of practice, they couldn't believe the compete level and the battle level and how hard we go. And again, our guys don't dread it. They're not like, oh, practice is going to be harder. Like, they love it. That's what they want. And that's why we need to recruit elite character kids that want to compete. They're high competitiveness, and they want that competitiveness in practice. And then we structure our drills and our practices around that.
You know, let me say on that, that comes from you and your staff, Rand. That's not like you demand that. And if you can't figure it out, then you got to go. It's pretty simple, right?
Yeah, we definitely, I mean, I wouldn't say we demand it, Lou. We expect it. It's just expected.
Yeah, whatever, right.
You show up at Quinnipiac, like I'm not making a kid, you know, go above, go 110%. That's what they want. That's what they want to do. And there's certainly, look, we had 26 kids last year, and I wouldn't say we're 26 for 26 on that. We're probably 24 for 26. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
you know, and our practices are just awesome. Like sometimes I step back and I'm like, wow, you know, we've had a couple already in September and the compete level is off the charts. So I like that. And then that's a wake up call for our new players. Like they're trying to catch up. Even our guys that are transfers, they're not used to that. Those are coming from. But we try to do a really good job with that.
Let me ask you one other question. When you talk about practice, Rand, Is there someone in the past, over the last 10 years, or let's say 15 years, that coaches you knew, elder statesmen, if you will, right, that you maybe took an idea or watched their practice that you took something from, like the way you practice, or has that all come from within you and the time you've been around the game?
Well, a lot of that came from, like, in my early years. I've told this story before on different, you know, different media outlets. It's just, I knew we needed to get better, and the way it worked, the way it works a lot for most colleges, majority of colleges, you play Friday, Saturday nights, and, you know, just being honest and realistic, kids, they go out Saturday night. They do. That's true. Really? College kids do. You don't want them to as a coach, but they do it. And, you know, they go out on Sunday. Sunday's football day. And then, they, you know, then you get to Monday practice, and Monday practices are always just junk. And you're like, hey, I don't want to scream and yell, but I want to get something out of it. And you got to pick, and like, you don't want to yell all day. Hey guys, you got to work harder. Like, it has to come from within. So I read this book by Dan Coyle. It's called The Talent Code. I believe it was the summer of 09. And he didn't talk about anything about hockey at all, but he talked about talent development in different areas. And I just hit home with me, like, what can I do different? Then I actually tracked down Dan and we talked a little bit, and he was great. And I just was like, you know what, a lot of what he talks about is defined practice, or 10,000 hours of practice and purposeful practice. And I was like, we're not getting that. We're not great on Monday. Tuesday's a little better. Wednesday's awesome. Thursday's pretty good. And then we play Friday, Saturday, and our guys do compete hard Friday, Saturday, but we're really going hard 4 of the 6 days. And I'm like, we need to go hard 6 of the 6 days, and our players' improvement will just kind of take off. They'll get better. So I give him a lot of credit. Just that book, it just triggered that in my mind. In order to do that with my players, it's not a light switch, because kids are used to, wherever they come from, they're not used to practicing hard every single day. In fact, there's a lot of coaches out there that feel like, hey, we want to pace them. We don't want to burn them out for the weekend, you know? But for me, now that we do that, like, we don't burn our kids out. Like, and a lot of reason we win is we're just in better shape than other teams. And we play for 60 and we're ready to go when that puck drops. Actually, we play for 120 minutes a weekend. A lot of other teams, they struggle. If you go back and watch some of our games, they struggle in the second period with our pace and they can't keep up.
That is what I loved about watching you guys this year. I mean, I've watched a few games over the years, but this year in particular, you could just tell that none of those kids were panting after their 45-second shift. You could tell they were ready to go right back out. And that was brilliant. So you talk about, you know, burnout, not burning out. You talk about your strength training. You talk about, you know, your on-ice training. We just finished the month of September where we focused on mental health awareness and suicide prevention. Is there anything that you do for your team around mental health, around, you know, checking in with them, making sure that everybody's doing okay? Because that has become a huge, ever since Robin Lehner announced it during the ESPYs about going through the challenges that he faced and how he got help, it's really kind of opened up. And for, you know, coaches who've been around a long time, that's a whole new kind of aspect to the game that you may not be as familiar with. But what kind of things do you do around that aspect of the athlete?
Well, first I would say, like, I think I try to be on top of that. I can remember 20 years ago, 25 years ago, having players that were having issues with depression, alcohol.
Wow.
I've had my girlfriend's pregnant. I've had everything, you know, and I try to get them help with psychologists or whatever. We do have right now, we have a sports psychologist, or I like to refer to her as a performance coach, Devin Markle. She's awesome. She's excellent. You know, like, even this summer, this is our culture. Like, this, I'm like, I reached out to Devin. I'm like, Devin, these are some of the freshmen coming in. I think you should meet with that. I have a concerns about one or two, and I think they would really help you. And she's like, oh, I already met with them. And I'm like, what? And my captain set up. They're like, hey, you need to get in touch with Devin. She's great. She'll help you. So I think it's, you know, are we perfect with it? No. But are we great at it? Yes. I think it's really accepted in our culture. I think there is a pushback in the hockey world at times. It's like, I don't need a mind coach. You know, I'm always like, look, we got a D coach, we got a power play coach, we got a strength coach, we got a goalie coach. Why don't we have a mind coach? You know, and that's what she does. And she's great at it. She does a great job. She helped a lot of our players last year. And sometimes it's not even, you know, I remember I had this kid, and I won't name his name, but this is years ago, and he came up to me. I was at one of my players' weddings, and he came up to me. He's like, and he really appreciated that I I guess I made him go see a sports psychologist.
Right.
Because I don't like to make them. I like them to want to do it. But I finally got to the point where, like, you have to go. And he did go. And he's like, you know what? And it did help me with hockey. But it more than that, it helped me with life.
Yeah.
And that was an eye-opener for me. Like, I was like, wow. And he came clean with it. I didn't know. He's like, he goes, I'm a better person today because you made me forget hockey. I'm a better person because you had me do that. And I fought you on it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't think I needed it. And then it changed my whole life. And that's pretty cool to me. And that's what I'm trying to do, is help these kids out with. I mean, yeah, we want to win hockey games. I want to make sure they graduate. But it's also my job to make them better people and set them up for success in life.
Wow, that's great. That's so good to hear, because with such a high caliber program, that you're normalizing it in their life, because it won't even, you know, right. Once they're done with athletics and they're playing in the beer league and they may have some struggles, they'll feel like, oh, well, I went and worked with a mind coach in college while I was an athlete. I'm going to go see someone now to help me with whatever's going on. That's great.
Yes. Yep.
I appreciate that very, very much. And I'd love to now kind of break down a little bit of this year's national championship winning team. When they came to, a year ago, when they came to campus and you were getting things going, were you like, this is the team? Or did that not happen until like March?
No, I mean, you could argue our team the year before was better.
Oh.
I mean, we won 30 something games, like 30 wins in college hockey. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think it's only happened 5 times in the last 40 years in the ECAC, and we have a 12 team league, right? And we've done it 4 times in the last, you know, like 11. So
wow.
It's not easy to win 30 games. But I, you know, so I was really worried. We got cleaned out, just completely cleaned out. A lot of really good players moved on, a lot of high character culture kids. So all last September, that Joe Dumy, my assistant, reminds me, I'm like, we're not good enough. We're not this, we're not that. And I'm like, all right, we need to make these kids better. We got to make them better fast. And I think we did do that. And a lot of kids kind of popped last year as the year went on. And then by the end of the year, I'm like, ooh, we're pretty good. But I wasn't thinking that way in September for sure.
Okay. Feeling this September with the team starting in.
Well, I'm probably the same way. We're not good enough. Like, we got to get better at these things. But I'll tell you what, our compete and our pace and practice has been excellent. So if we're going to do that and battle at that level, we'll have a good year. Certainly, we lost some really good players again. Yanni Peretz was, you know, one of the best goalies in the country the last 2 years, so he's gone. He signed. But we'll find a way. You know, we always do. And I do like – I love the freshman class that we brought in. The transfers with the new transfer portal are really good. And we just got to – I think the biggest thing is getting guys to buy in, and not just buy in, but buy in, but all in. You know, you got to be all in. You can't buy in at 80%. It's got to be 100%. And if we do that, we'll get rewarded in March.
What's the best way for a coach to communicate that buy-in?
I mean, just, you know, like last year, like our big thing I focused on was, you know, embrace the grind. You know, that was a big phrase I used. And we talked a lot about, like, cause we didn't go and blow out teams all the time. And we, you know, our record was crazy good, but every game was close, and it was a grind over and over again. And you know, teams would get fired up to playoffs, and we just found a way to win games, to grind out wins. And our guys kind of really embraced that. And I think we also were comfortable in close games, and we were comfortable with dealing with adversity. And if you look at the Minnesota game, the national championship game, we're down 2-0. And there was zero panic on the bench. The guys were confident. We knew we needed to play better. We didn't have the best first period. But we knew we needed to kind of impose our will. And again, once we made it 2-1, you know, it's just guys could just feel it. That whole last part of the second period, we dominated. And then the third period, the ice was like tilted. It was like downhill. And like, we were playing to win, you know, there was just no stopping us. I was so impressed with how we came back, battle back. And there's no doubt about it. Our boys deserved it.
That overtime goal. It was just so delightful as a fan to watch, even on the TV. I can't even imagine what it was like in person. But I think it's really cool that Quillen and Quinnipiac. So
yeah, there you go.
Do you go out there now and you're recruiting anybody with a QUI in their name?
Yeah, not a lot of those, though.
No, there's not. It's a 26-point Scrabble word right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when the team reacted, what was that moment like? I mean, this is a typical journalist question, but I got to hear it for myself.
I mean, you can't even explain it. It's just so surreal. Like, it's unbelievable. Honestly, I didn't see the goal because I was standing down And all the, you know, all my guys who are like 6'4" on skates or 6'2" on, they all stood up when we got the, chance session. And I got blocked. And I'm like, I thought it went in. I wasn't sure. And then Joe Dumas, who stands on the bench always, because he's a little shorter than I am.
I think he's taller than I am.
he took like 3 strides and tackled me from the side. So I was like, I have no idea. I have to watch the videos to see that we actually scored the goal, because I didn't see it live. I just felt it. And then, you know, just crazy emotions and, you know, rewarding. And it just, I can't even explain it. It was unbelievable. It was awesome.
That's so incredible. And what a great feeling. And that's just something that you have in your heart that's going to like be burning and pushing you and your guys forever. Because that's just something you can never take away from them. What an experience, huh?
Yeah, it was awesome. It's a life-changing experience.
Yeah, and they fully embraced the grind and came out win. Yeah.
And I don't know how many times. I must have said it 100 times last year. Yeah? We do this, we do this. Player identity, you will get rewarded in March. And then I started changing it to you'll get rewarded in April. And, you know, I was right. So it was good. It all worked out.
That's great. I mean, that's when players are definitely going to buy in. So I have a couple of questions around hockey today. And sure. Something that I've noticed, you know, you look at the Matty Beniers, the Logan Cooleys, the Owen Powers, all these guys, and then they're making the jump directly to the NHL. I've kind of come to the observation that it feels like the NHL is looking at college hockey right now as a free AHL. Like, you guys are developing their players, but it's for free for them.
It's a great point. And I think college hockey is as good as it's ever been. I mean, the amount of players that we're turning out right now, it's not just, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it might've just been returning out depth players, you know, but now, I mean, there's so many high end elite players in the NHL that played college hockey, whether they did 1 year or 2 years or 3, the occasional kid will stay for 4 if they're that elite. But, and again, kids are trying to debate, hey, should I go major junior or should I go college? And the thing about college, like if you're hedging your bets in case it doesn't work, because now you're going to get your degree. And then a really good example, and I heard Rod Brindamore say this somewhere, some podcast, but I'm probably paraphrasing a little bit, but his son played for him. He, you know, left at 23, and he probably, I don't know if he was ready at 21 to go pro. You know, if you go major, you're going pro at 21. And from where he went from 21 as a sophomore to 22 as a junior, and this year at 23, is unbelievable. His growth. Like, he was an absolute beast this year. Hmm. He's one of the better players in our league. Great player. One of the better players in college hockey, and a big reason why we won. And it was fun to hear Rod say that, but Schuyler wasn't like that as a freshman. Like, he just wasn't. Like, each year he got better and better and better. And obviously that's a big benefit to playing college hockey. If you're ready, you can sign early and go. And if you're not ready, you keep playing and wait till you're a little bit older and more mature to tackle the pro game.
You mentioned that you do well. Go ahead, Lou.
I just want to say, that's an interesting point, because I watched that kid play at South Kent. Did he not go to South Kent?
He did, yep.
I he had the name, so, you know, everybody knew who he was, and Ronnie's a great guy. So, like, yeah. But in his first year or two there, I'll be honest, I said, he's kind of okay. And to your point, I was probably right? He was okay, right?
And he was fine. He was like our third line center. He defended well, killed a little bit, but didn't. He didn't have enough compete. He didn't have enough of that jam. And then slowly but surely, within our culture, and because he's always a great athlete. Actually, he was initially committed to another school, and then they dropped him when he was in junior hockey. They weren't happy with him, so I was like, "We'll take him." And
I didn't know that. Sure.
Yeah,
good example.
We were in on him, and we were the final two schools. We lost the battle. And he went to a Big Ten school, and then they dropped him. And then we got him back. We eventually got him, and then it worked out great for us. But, you know, and I think he's got to play a little bit in the American League, but he's got a chance to play.
On that note, you sell your program how you want to, but he's a pretty good selling point for the point you're making about that 22nd, 23rd birthday, if you want to call it that, right?
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, when I watched him a lot, I said, I'm not sure. And I wasn't alone, probably, right?
Right.
You know?
Nope.
But he's a great example of exactly what you're talking about. He's like for me, he's almost like the the picture child. Like, he's the guy. Like, that's a good example of.
Yeah, we've had a bunch come through. We've had a bunch of, like, you know, kids that just walked on for us, and then they end up playing, maybe not 10 years in the NHL, but they play NHL games. You know, we've had kids that literally nobody offered, and we just take as a walk-on, and they make the NHL. Like, that's a pretty good development model. We've done that a bunch.
So, with that said, he committed to a Big Ten school while he was probably – was he playing junior hockey at that time when he committed, do you know? Okay, so obviously we're in the throes of this, Lou and I. We know a lot of these kids who are committing, and it's become pretty prevalent for a lot of these schools to commit 80 kids, and then you can only take so many. What's your advice to parents out there and to the players out there about, you know, committing to a college when they're 16, 17 years old and they may not get there for 5 years? What's your advice on that?
Yeah, it's hard. It's I mean, I actually heard it from a parent the other day whose kid was committed to, I won't name the name, one of the most blatant teams with overcommitting, and they referred to it as the Hunger Games. You know, like, it's like, oh, jeez. But you still let your kid commit there. So it's just, it doesn't make sense to me, but you know, and there's a two-way street. There's also, you know, a lot of players that are committing places and then they kind of get better and they pop and they decommit from that school and they go to a different school. You know, it's like, you know, you met the nice girl at the dance, but then the hot one comes over and wants to dance with you once and you drop her. And, you know, it's the same thing that happened in high school or eighth grade, whatever, all over again. But so it's,
are you telling us something about your eighth grade year?
Yeah, no, well, listen, that wasn't me. Eighth grade was not kind to me. I was beyond awkward at that age. We don't need to get into that. But it can go both ways. But it's not a great situation, I think, right now with, you know, kids committing, decommitting, schools decommitting kids. I don't know how the NCAA is going to clean it up, but it used to be worse when kids committed in ninth grade. Now at least we have to wait until 11th grade. That is probably better as a whole. But it's, you know, it's just such a unique situation, and it's I don't know how they're going to fix it. But I think people in college don't love it. I think parents don't love it. The NCAA doesn't love it. But I'm not sure how they fix it.
The Hunger Game comment, I have to tell you, I have a friend, a former lawyer, Michelle Rose from Virginia, her son, Jack Lodges, who went to Westminster, who's playing in the NCDC, is going to NESCAC. And she says, it's the first time I heard it last year. She said, Lou, for parents, it's the Hunger Games. But some of them don't know it till someone taps them on the shoulder and says, hey, you're in the Hunger Games. And it's so true. It is so true. I'll tell you. I'm glad I don't have to go through it. My little one swims. She's just a good swimmer, decent swimmer. I don't have this issue like Julie's son. Like, I don't have it. I'm glad I don't have it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because, Coach, don't you usually go with some older kids? Your team's mostly older kids, so they're usually playing 3 full years of junior hockey probably when they come to you?
I think years past, we used to be a little bit older. Now we're taking more kids at 19 and 20. Okay. We will occasionally take a kid at 18. We will take some at 21, but most of our kids are 19 or 20. There are definitely programs out there that are built on taking all 21-year-old freshmen. And I don't blame them for doing it. Maybe they're a little further down the food chain and they can't get the high-end kids, so they're going to go old. And that's probably what I did 15 years ago, and that's why we got good and went to the 2013 pro. We were a really old team. You know, we had older kids, more mature. But we're not in that mold as much now. In the end, again, I go back to what I said earlier, high hockey IQ and elite character. That's what we need. Whether he's 18, 19, 20, or 21, that's what we want.
And those two pieces are going to stay with them, whether they're 18 or 23.
So, correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, tell me about what's happening next week. Let's talk about the excitement that's happening on campus and where you're going to send my tickets.
Our first game is Boston College, who poll hasn't come out yet. I would think they're in the top 5. I would think we're in the top 5, which just might be my guess. There was actually one poll that did come out, had a second. Although I think we had the most first place votes, but I don't know. My son was talking about it. I was like, I don't worry about preseason polls. I worry about the poll at the end of the year. But so it's a matchup, top 5 matchup, and it'll be our opening game, and we're going to raise the national championship banner. So It's been crazy. Like I keep using the phrase, like it's the ticket issue is it's harder than my wedding, but that's probably not fair because my wife handled the whole wedding. But I think there's tickets going for like 250 plus on StubHub already, and standing rooms are going for 200, and it's tough. And you're going to have so many NHL teams there to scout. The BC kids who are loaded. BC's loaded this year.
Yes.
And then most of them, honestly, most of them will be there to watch. I've got some of the best undrafted free agents in college hockey. So we'll probably have this bus of NHL guys that follows us every game. Like I've had it in the past, which is great for all of my players. But I will have some of the best kids in college hockey that aren't drafted.
I think that's great. I think, well, Lou, I think you've even given the advice about don't commit early or don't sign early because then everybody stops looking at you.
Well, maybe. I think that happens. But I want to say about the banner, you know, when you throw out the opening pitch in New York, you kind of made it. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen to me in life. But, you know, well, you never know. Probably not. So
it's because you're an Oakland A's fan or soon to be Vegas A's fan.
Yeah.
But that's funny.
Which still makes no sense. You're from Philadelphia.
And you know what? Nobody likes us and we don't care.
Oh my gosh. So how big is your stadium and how many people are actually going to be in it next week, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, we hold 3,300 and then standing room, our concourse is big. I don't know what's going to happen.
You just know that you've got a spot on the bench and you don't care.
my wife has tickets. My kids have tickets. I'm getting hit left and right for tickets. So anyway, it's all great. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great game. And once the banner goes up, it's awesome. And then we'll settle in. It's going to be a great hockey game.
Oh, that's going to be so
fun. Let me just say one other thing. The woman that I can't remember her name, Ren, every time I'm there, she runs the office for you.
She's
been with you a long time, Julie. What a great lady. And she couldn't be more accommodating, more friendly. It's just really like when you walk down the hall and you stop the office, get the lineups, it's like a breath of fresh air. It really should be commended. Great. She's terrific. And I say hello to her. She kind of knows me and she's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's good to hear. Yeah.
Yes. It's fantastic.
It's all good stuff. Well, again, elite character right there.
Yes.
Run it through the program. Well, is there any fun hockey mom stories that you've got that you want to share with our listeners?
There's some I probably wouldn't share.
Come on. You can do it here.
I will say this. So I have an 05 and I have a 2013. They both play for Mid-Fairfield. There were a bunch of the hockey moms, the 2013 moms, all went to Tampa to watch our team play. That was
pretty cool. That's really cool.
I can't tell you what their – you know, their nickname was for down there. I'm not going to say that out loud, but I thought that was really neat. But the hockey world, it's the youth hockey world. It's crazy and it's hard to navigate. Yeah. And hopefully just the only thing I would say is make sure your kid plays other sports. Like they're just all the research shows you got to play other sports, to develop the rest of your athleticism. And there's just, I'm doing this as a coach. I'm watching, I'm recruiting. I just saw the 05s all go through this. Now I'm watching the 13s go through it. There's so much burnout when you have your kids play too much hockey and only hockey at a young age. So just be really cautious with that. You might think you're doing the right thing, but in the long run, your kid might be done with hockey at 16 or 17 or 18, or you might fizzle. You know, make sure. So that would be my big advice.
You know, I think that's
– you want to say
– Oh, go ahead, Lou.
Go ahead. I was saying, like, I have a program in the summer, Rand. You have one in the summer. And I tell kids all the time, look, if you want to come to me, great, but go to one other event, go to the district for USA Hockey, and I want you to train all summer. That's my opinion. I don't want kids playing. They go all these different events all summer long, and it's really not needed. It really isn't. You know what I'm saying? You know. So
I think the only time that has some benefit is, say, the player was, you know, a fourth-line grinder and maybe only got – 4 or 5 minutes a game, maybe they do want to get a little bit more game experience. But no, I'm right on board with you guys. And it's interesting, though, because you hear about Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon. You hear about these guys who are skating year-round, like barely taking any time off to really build up what they need to build up and rest what they need to rest. And so when you're looking at 30 years ago hockey compared to today's hockey, that's probably the biggest thing is trying to get these kids to relax, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just play, like, again, when I say play other sports, like, you know, age 5, 6 to, you know, 13, 14, surely you can specialize in hockey at 15 or 16. Sure. That's fine at that age. But they just, all the studies show, like, the, you know, your athleticism, your muscle development, it just benefits, you're benefited by playing other sports. So, you know, my 2013, now he's 10, he loves the baseball, he plays it. I'm trying to get him in the golf, because that'll get me on the golf course too.
There you go.
I'm losing that battle right now. I'm trying, but he loves the baseball. I want him to do lacrosse. He's like, I want to do baseball. So you let him do what he wants to do, but it's great. As long as he's playing other sports and involved in things, I think that's important.
I put my kid in jiu-jitsu so he'd be able to fight in the NHL.
Yeah, there you go.
I have a question, Rand. I think of this often. You know, I go back to the, you know, I'm 63. I go back to the Broad Street Bullies, and even before Andre Lacroix was my favorite player in 67, yeah. The Flyers, you know, and they smoked in the locker room. Let's be honest. They did things that you'll never see today. Do you think that professional players take less time off because there's so much money driving it, and there's a guy to take your place if you mess up? Do you think that's what drives the maybe 10 months a year training or 11 months a year? What do you think?
I mean, it could be. I think there's so many different things. I think there's also – there's so much opportunity to play year-round. It's probably the biggest thing. You know, like, I mean, I'm when I was a kid, like, you couldn't get ice in the summer. You couldn't – I grew up in Bedford, New Hampshire, right, a suburb of Manch, Vegas, and there were no skills coaches. There was no skate. Like, there wasn't any of that stuff. Now there is. You can find them all over the place.
Yes, you can. Yes.
And you can, and you can find these spring hockey is the Wild West. Summer hockey, spring's become summer. It's the Wild West. And there's so many people, if you're a good player, you're getting 15 phone calls to play on this team and that team. And so I think a lot of it is just more opportunity. And you just, as a parent, you got to say no. And like my 2013, we shut him down for, it was almost 2 months of no hockey this summer. And he played a ton of baseball and he loved it. And I think it's going to be better for him in the long run. Did it help maybe some of the kids, the 10-year-olds he's going against that they played every day this summer? Yeah, they probably created a little gap now, but I think when he's 15, 16 to 18, he'll catch and pass them. And I truly believe that. And I see that over and over with this 05 group. A lot of kids who were great at 12 aren't very good at 18.
Yes.
They burnt out and they didn't play other sports.
Yeah,
I did another Julie. I was on it. I'm with Julie every week, but I did a show with John Bork from Comcast, the old Comcast guy, called Raising a Champion. I call it like the curse of the 12-year-old. So the last thing you want is a great 12-year-old, because when he scores 60 goals as a peewee, when he gets to be 16, his mom and dad still think he's scoring 60 goals.
Yeah, right.
And the fact of it is, he's not. And
no,
there's
hard.
That mindset. You know, it's hard. And yeah. And in Jersey, we had back when they were 14, the best 5 2001s, four of them didn't even play hockey at 18.
Right.
You know, so yep. There's a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the message is clear, you know, burnout is real. So take some time off, learn some other skills, stay in college, get your degree so that you're set for the rest of your life outside of hockey. And we're going to watch Quinnipiac do some fun stuff this year.
That's the plan. Yeah,
like
a lot of wins. A lot of wins again. That's our plan.
Yeah, there we go. And, you know, you don't have to name players, but what should we be watching for from Quinnipiac? Maybe not who we should be watching for, but what should we be watching for?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same things that you've seen. Like, if you go back and you can watch them on YouTube, you can watch our win over Minnesota or Michigan or whatever. Like we're just relentless. We hunt the puck. We skate. And we compete, and we win a lot of battles, and then I think we're pretty detailed. Obviously, the overtime goal was a face-off play that we ran, and it was actually the third time in the game we ran it. The other two times we didn't get a scoring chance. We did get the zone with the puck, but I think in the end, probably just, you know, if you just when you watch Quinnipiac play, you'll notice our identity and how hard we play and how relentless on the puck we are.
Well, I'll just say this: like, the third time may have been the charm, but I'm a believer. Without risk, there's no reward. And you take a lot of risk, and you got rewarded for it, and good for you. Because a lot of people play it safe, and
yeah.
I'm certainly not a tip the guy toe water type guy. And
yeah.
I'm gonna applaud you, man. It takes a lot of guts. takes. Roy does.
Yeah.
Roy does.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're probably referring to pulling the goalie early, but
I think you set a new trend.
I'm telling you, like 15, 20 years from now, what I'm doing with pulling the goalie, I think that's going to be the norm. I think you're going to see more and more guys pulling it early.
I agree. I thought that was brilliant. I mean, why wait? I mean, especially, you know, it's like going for it on fourth down. You still have, you know, 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Same kind of situation. So, you know what we didn't talk about, Coach, that I would like to kind of broach with you is both the transfer portal and NIL. We had Brad Schlossman on, the owner of, or the keeper of the portal for hockey from North Dakota. And we talked a bit, we know all about the process and what it's all about. What are your thoughts on how it's positively affecting college hockey? And then what are some of the negative things?
I mean, it's hard. I could talk about that for an hour. I just think the way I would look at it, I think in college hockey right now, all the coaches pretty much across the board are complaining about the transfer portal. It's just complaining. And you know what I say to my assistants? We're not going to complain about it. It's here. We're going to embrace it. We're going to use it to our advantage. And you got to figure out how you can win with it. And we've done a good job of that for the last 2 years. I think we did another good job with it this year. What does it prove to complain about? It's here. You can't. Same thing with NIL. It's here.
Yeah.
You better figure out how to use it to your advantage, or you're going to get left in the dust. So that's kind of how I look at both those things. You know, do I love the portal and NIL? No, I don't love it, but it's here, and you better figure out a way how it's utilized to be successful with it, or like I said, you're going to get left behind.
Are colleges employing or contracting with NIL specialists to help them help their players benefit from NIL, or?
It depends on the school, but yeah, there's places like Open Doors, and because you want to make sure you fulfill NCAA compliance. You don't want to break the rules and stuff. So most schools have, Quinnipiac uses Open Doors, and they will come in and give the kids seminars and explain the rules to them, and our compliance people will explain the rules to them. And because you don't want to do something that's going to get you ineligible, or coaches don't want to do something that's going to get in trouble. So I think most schools do that. I know we do that with Open Doors.
Because hockey's so different. The hockey guys are way more, I don't know what the right word is. They don't like being out in front of the camera or like pushing themselves. It feels to me like hockey players are like just much more team oriented and humble and subtle. I don't know.
Yeah, in a way, but if you give them enough money, they'll do it.
They'll start dancing.
Yeah. Oh, money will change everybody. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah. I do think, not talking about other sports, I do think, you know, hockey players, male hockey players that I deal with, and I see a lot of guys go to the NHL, and I deal with them after they're out of the, whatever. I think it is a really good group.
Yeah.
I think they're for the most part, they're very high character and successful, and they're going to be successful in life once hockey's done for them.
And, you know, I'm coming around on the whole junior thing. I used to, you know, beat my chest against junior hockey and everything. But I'm coming around on it because it feels like you're getting more opportunity for these kids to grow their character before they get into a college situation or professional situation. They're having more time to really build who they are before they're put in those situations. So I'm really changing my tune on junior hockey.
Yeah, it's not perfect. A lot of what junior hockey does is teaches survival skills.
Yes.
That's what it does, you know, but it's not perfect. But
Hunger Games.
Yeah, it does. It does. You better figure it out or you're going to get traded or cut or, you know, like you're not going to be in the lineup. But
yeah.
So there's good things, but, you know, again, it's junior hockey is not perfect, but it is what it is. It's the same thing. You got to embrace it. Because that's the system that we have now, whether it's right or wrong.
Right. Yes. So I'm embracing. This is me embracing. No, but it's fun. We had fun this last weekend. I saw something this past weekend at the USHL Fall Classic that I have never seen. And I don't know, Coach, if you've ever seen this. So there was a delayed penalty. The puck was coming down at where the goalie took off from the team who was going to go on the power play. And the offending team came down. The kid almost put a stick on it as it was heading for the net, but he grabbed his stick up really fast, and the puck went in the net, and that team scored a goal.
Yeah.
The offending team scored a goal. I've never seen it. And I love the quick thinking of this kid who was ready to like tap it in. And then he was like, oh no, I can't touch it because that's possession. The whistle will blow.
Right.
And it just sailed on in. Never seen it.
We had a game with Union. This was years ago. And Shane Gostisbehere, who is a big time NHL player, right? He's played a long time. They had their goalie out and he went a spinorama to get away from a guy and it shot off his stick and it went down. And we scored a goal on it. It was awesome.
Oh,
and I mean, obviously, I think the Ghost probably had 4 points against us that night, but he did put one in his own net. So that I saw the one in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I saw the same game. I was at the same game you were at. But yeah, I always remember the Ghost doing that. I was like, oh my God, how did that happen? But
yeah,
you know, so it was fun. I wish I had a clip of that. I don't know. I probably can find it somewhere. It's pretty good.
Everything's on YouTube these days.
Yeah. That was like 2013, maybe 2014. It was in that range.
There's no more microfiche.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. I know you've probably got a practice to get to now, or you're getting close to nap time because it's between 3 and 6.
No, I'm actually gonna scoot out here and go watch my daughter's field hockey game right now.
Oh, so nice. All right. Yeah, well, good luck to her.
Thank you.
Well, it was great to meet you because I had so much fun this season watching you guys play. So it's a big honor to have you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, Coach. Thanks. Good seeing you again.
Okay. Lou, we'll see you around the rinks.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Coach. Bye-bye.